The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay. So today I would like to offer some reflections. It's a continuation of a theme that Maria Line started last week on wise effort. The Pali is Sammavayama, which I just like it because it rhymes. Sammavayama. And this is part two of three. She'll be offering part three in a couple of weeks. And to say that it is a factor on the Noble Eightfold Path, as she talked about, as broader context, wise effort is in a lot of the Buddhist teachings, a lot of the lists. So that is an indication of how important it is. It's a parami, or a beautiful quality to perfect. It's part of the seven factors of awakening. It's part of many different ways of orienting to the teachings. And part of why we're talking about it is that many of us habitually either over-effort in our lives and in our meditation practice, or it's easy to become kind of complacent and get stuck in a rut. So that balance is key. She talked about that balance last week, this tuning our instrument to the right amount of effort, just like you might tune a guitar. If it's too slack, you can't play music. If it's too taut, those of us who maybe have a background in being a workaholic or overworking know that you can't play at all and string might break. Something might break down. So over time, it's possible to develop some wisdom in knowing when a feather-light touch, like Sayadaw Utejaniya so often advocates for, this feather-light touch of persistence is more helpful, or when strong effort and striving is necessary. Most of the time, for most of us, a more nuanced approach, a more responsive approach is helpful. So many common translations of Sammavayama can obscure the more kind of discerning, gently paced approach. And so I'm going to offer a little bit about that, because often if those of you who like to read the discourses, strong effort is really emphasized. And there is a place for it. It can be very skillful. A moment of addictive craving might come through, and it might be that is a moment for strong effort, an internal no. But much of the time, it's more of a not giving up, gentle persistence in the effort, not hopping up out of my meditation seat to check the news, for example. Okay. So this alternative kind of translations for this Pali that I want to just offer as kind of a range or cluster of meanings. Sometimes I call this a word cloud. To feel into some of the other dimensions of what wise effort can be. So if you want, you can close your eyes or just tap into your body and feel into how these words affect you. So other translations for effort are to practice restraint. To practice restraint. To take up. To uphold. To support. And to befriend. Vayama. Support, uphold, take up, practice restraint, and befriend. And then Samma, great effort. Samma also means completely, thoroughly, properly, rightly, holistically. So to take up thoroughly, to support completely, to uphold properly, to practice restraint holistically, or to befriend completely. All of these are alternate translations for great effort, or the four great efforts, which are typically associated with wise effort, wise energy on the Eightfold Path. These are not the primary meanings. I want to emphasize that. Instead, they're facets of meanings associated. Just like in English, the word great can be big, wonderful, important, or it can just mean a lot. So even in English, right, we have these nuanced meanings. Pali is no different. In fact, it often has more. In my own practice, in my own heart, my own mind, supporting, befriending, upholding have been really helpful attitudes to approaching practice. Whether my mind is in beneficial or skillful states, wholesome states, or in awful, unwholesome, unskillful places. And it has tended to be more helpful than aversion towards an unskillful state. As Marjolein talked about last week, we can't just drop something like irritation. Like, sometimes that can happen, but usually our emotions don't quite work on demand. Have you noticed? It's not, you know, no light switch there typically. Not one that we can press. So instead, this is a cultivation process, and this sort of friendly interest, friendly engagement, kindness, compassion tends to be a lot more helpful than pure exertion, especially if the exertion is coming from, I don't want that, pushing. Because what happens when we push? Often there's resistance. And pushing against something can actually feed it. Sayadaw Tejaniya says, when we put in effort to be mindful, most of the time we don't know how to avoid being forceful. If we want to have more balanced effort, we should use wisdom to remind ourselves, our minds, to be mindful. Then it's automatically less forceful. So sometimes it's looking at the condition underneath, the mindfulness, as opposed to the being caught in the story or being caught in the thing, being into the thing or against the thing, whatever the thing is. So this allows for more perseverance, for more wisdom to grow. And I'll offer a mnemonic that emerged in my mind on retreat in the last couple of years, some long retreat, I don't remember which one. It's the acronym PACE, as in pace yourselves. It's P for prevent unwholesome states from arising. A for abandon arisen wholesome states. C for cultivate unarisen skillful states, and E for extending wholesome, skillful, beautiful states of mind. And Marjolein will talk about the last two of these, the C and the E, the cultivate and extend, the next time. Meanwhile, I'll cover the first two today in the time we have left. So preventing unwholesome states. I'm going to start with this, with a story. Most of you have heard this story, very famous simile called the acrobat simile. Who here has heard this before? Yeah, a lot of you, not all of you. So, ancient India, this is the Buddha's time, and it is an apprenticeship culture. So in order to learn anything, a trade, a skill, a livelihood, there's some kind of apprenticeship that happens. And this story takes place, and it's about a master acrobat and an apprentice acrobat. And I didn't realize this for years when I was telling this story, but it turns out the apprentice acrobat's name translates as frying pan. Now, what the heck that is supposed to mean, I don't know. But it's nice to kind of remember that there might be some humor in this story. Maybe she came out of a cooking family or something, but there might also be some humor. So, she is a she, and in ancient India, that means that she's also not quite as established as her male, more experienced counterpart in more than one way. And the way acrobatics worked back then is they didn't have trapezes, they certainly didn't have nets. But they would perform at the side of the road or maybe in a town square, and they would perform by literally one of them would balance a bamboo pole on their chest or their head, and the other one, if you can picture this, would balance on top of the pole. So this is hazardous work. We're not just talking about a tightrope here or balance bars. And the master, because he had more experience, was the role on the bottom, because if the person on the bottom messes up, the person on the top is, well, in trouble. And before their performance, he turned to Frying Pan and he said, "Here's what we're going to do. I look after your safety. You look after my safety, and that way we'll perform our tricks and collect our fee." And she contemplates this for a moment. And she says, "Master, I don't think that's how it should work. I think you should look after yourself and your balance, your own side of the pole, and I should look after myself. And that way we will both perform safely and collect our money." Okay, so we have a disagreement here, and a lady with some chutzpah, which is great. So, afterwards, someone told this story to the Buddha, and the Buddha said, "Well, the apprentice is right. The mindfulness of each person's actions will support the other. Each person can keep the other one safe, the other one in balance, by looking to their own balance, to their own way of moving and being in the world." And then he goes on to say, "But the master's right too. The master is advocating a position that is like sila, like ethical conduct. And in that way, we keep ourselves safe by looking after the interests of the other, by not stealing, killing, lying, engaging in sexual misconduct, by not becoming intoxicated and losing mindfulness." So they're both right, and they're correlates to this mindfulness and ethical restraint. Ethical restraint. So I'm bringing this up in a talk about effort because sila, restraint, is a key part of effort, of wise effort in particular, not just the relational effort that's important, but restraint is also really helpful in establishing boundaries within ourselves, helpful ways to channel my mind's energy, my words, my physical actions. The key question with preventing unwholesome states from arising is to consider welfare for yourself, welfare for others, and welfare for all concerned. So that's a consideration, a wisdom reflection that can be dropped in early on. It's like, is that activity really going to make me happy? Or feed what's nourishing in me and my life? Or will it feel good for a few minutes and then set me up for greater pain, discomfort, suffering later? So mindfulness helps this process because if we don't notice where the mind is going, where the body is going, It's a lost cause, friends. We know this, right? We don't, unless you've had a lot of conditioning, a lot of conditioning to channel the mind into helpful habits, healthy habits, exercise, eating right, sleeping, whatever it is, meditating. It's easy for a little foot of impulse to hijack your day, your hour, your moment, your year. So the mindfulness guards and protects against the growth of unskillful states. Unskillful states and unskillful actions. And this is all kind of an interplay of restraint, mindfulness, and wisdom, this wisdom of learning. And eventually, with prevention, the mind learns we don't need to go there. We just don't need to go there. Our systems have an organic intelligence. So then the A, we've covered the P of prevention, at least somewhat. And then the A is abandoning unskillful states that have already arisen. And in some ways, this can be a lot harder. It's like this process, you know, when the train's out of the station, slowing it down, stopping it is harder than just, you know, not starting it to begin with, not getting on the train to begin with. So here, there's a number of teachings that could be useful. I'll just name that Mario Ein gave a talk back in August of last year on a great sutta, a great discourse about this, which is either called the removal of distracting thoughts, if Bhikkhu Bodhi translated it, or something about stabilizing thoughts, if it was translated by Ajahn Sujata, Bhikkhu Sujata. And it's Majjhima Nikaya 20, for those of you who are into that sort of thing. And I'm just going to run through very quickly some of the Buddha's advice about this and then add a couple of words of my own. So, he gave five strategies. The first is to be like a carpenter. If there's an unskillful thought, an unskillful state, to drive it out of the mind the way you would take a peg and drive out another peg from a board with a hammer. Right? Just knock it out. So this is intentionally changing the channel, right? Intentionally doing something, getting up, going for a walk, going for a swim, sitting down to breathe for a few minutes, calling a friend, whatever it takes to shift the mind out of an unwholesome groove. Two is that wisdom reflection, again, is to consider the disadvantages. Consider the disadvantages. And this is the flip side of what I brought up earlier. Instead of will this benefit me, the other, or the world, is it will this cause pain, affliction for myself, for someone else, for the collective? The third is the mental equivalent of closing your eyes and ignoring something or averting your gaze, right? So it's just ignore it. La 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 la, not hearing you, not hearing you, not seeing you, whatever. And that's if it's pretty strong, can be helpful. Or you can be here, but I'm just not going to give you any energy. The fourth is to look at the underlying conditions of whatever that state is. And usually it's being fueled by some kind of emotion, some kind of need, some kind of impulse. And to turn to that and slow it down, soothe it. And the example the Buddha gives is if you're running, to choose to walk instead. And if you're walking, to stand. If you're standing, well, why am I standing? I could sit. And if you're sitting, well, why do I need to sit? I could lie down. So it's gradually slowing things down, calming things down. And then the last one, which should be used very sparingly, in my view, he gives the example of one strong man subduing another. And it's quite graphic, the description, to like clench your teeth and put your tongue on the top of your mouth and subdue mind with mind. Okay, it's very sort of battle-oriented statements, right? So that again, that is where heroic effort, virya, heroic effort comes in. is there are moments where it's like, I'm not going to do that thing. I'm just not doing it. A good, strong no can be helpful. It's like the no of not letting the kid run into traffic in the street. Nope, bad idea. Might be a little force involved. So to see here that there's a range, right? A range. And then just to add to that, sometimes rather than forcible exertion, it can be more like just channeling the energy, more like a Tai Chi move or a jujitsu move of allowing the energy of a thought or an impulse to run through. Okay, step aside. Can keep going. So, those are some of my thoughts. I could say a lot more, but really it's considering how your mind, how your heart relate to unskillful states. It doesn't have to be a matter of self-blame, of shame. We're all human. These are installed in all of us when we're born, basically. Greed, hatred, delusion, and all of their little correlates that come along. Wisdom, maturity on the path comes along from learning to relate to them with kindness, with discernment, and with some tools. So, thank you very much for your kind attention. Appreciate it. And we have a few minutes for questions, comments, protests, whatever anyone wants to bring in. And it can be in the chat to me privately if you're shy. You can also ask me via chat to pause the recording, and we can do this privately within our little group. Or you can just raise your hand and talk. Okay, the person who asked for privately, you can either private chat me or I will pause right now. Give me an indication of which you would prefer. Okay, thank you for your practice, your kind attention, your perspectives and sharing, your wisdom, your vulnerability. Thank you for bringing all of yourselves here today. May all beings everywhere benefit directly and indirectly from our practice here together. May it ripple out to all of the lives we touch and all of the lives they touch, and so on and so on. Be well. Feel free to unmute and say goodbye if you wish.
Thank you, Don. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Be well.